We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Thanks for calling Toyota. This is Jan.
I just adopted a new best friend, and I'm looking for a Toyota so we can make the most out of summer.
With a new RAV4, you can take your pup for a drive up the coast. You can take a Prius to the park, or you can take a Tundra to kayak at a remote lake.
One problem, Jan.
Oh?
My new best friend's a cat.
Your summer starts here, but it all ends June 3rd. Toyota, let's go places. Dealer inventory may vary. See your participating Toyota dealer for details.
Visit your Front Range Toyota stores today. Toyota, let's go places.
Running the option on first down. Hagan has it. He has Rome. He's got one man to beat. Now he pitches to Flanagan, and he may take it all the way. Flanagan's in for the touchdown.
McKinley Wright from the logo.
Oh,
got it! Oh, McKinley Wright.
Breaks a tackle. Touchdown. Touchdown. That's five for Chris Brown.
The defense of Tomlinson.
It's scrimmage week. Welcome into the DMVR Buffs podcast presented by the American Raptors. I am pretty fired up because I get to watch the Buffs play football on Saturday. And you do too. Make sure that you get out to Folsom. I think the scrimmage starts at 1. If it's not, it either starts at 1 or ends at 1. It might be like 11:30 that starts and ends at 1. Something like that. I think that's what it is. Media availability is at 1. And that's why I said that wrong. I really should have planned this part out. But get out there, because it's going to be a lot of fun, and we're going to learn a lot about this team. Crazy to think that we are already 20% of the way through spring camp. Three practices down, 12 to go, including three scrimmages, two of them that we'll be able to see. We'll have a lot to talk about this week. I should say, I'll be live after the scrimmage on Saturday, and we'll probably be maybe like an hour and a half after the scrimmage ends, we'll be live from the DMVR bar. That's why it takes so long, because obviously scrimmage at Folsom Field in Boulder. After that, you have the media availability, got to talk to the guys, and then drive back down to Denver, and then talk about the first time we've seen Buffs football in 5 months. And even calling what we saw at the end of last season football might be a bit bold, so who knows? Maybe you could make a case that it's the first time since that Texas A&M game. But that's beside the point. The point is, this is a really big week, because we are going to learn a lot this week. And I am, as you could probably tell, fired up. I will also say this. I went over to Starbucks this morning, got some cold brew. I always get one size too big, because the thing is, like, you run out of coffee and you think like, oh, I want to keep drinking something. Like, it's just nice to have something like that you just have in your hand all day. But then the problem is, you get halfway through one of these big old coffees and it's, I don't know. I feel like I'm on drugs, honestly. I feel like I'm on drugs. But who knows? Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe I need to start doing drugs for the podcast. I don't know. But I'm fired up about this. Today, we are going to go back through what Carl had to say in his kind of end of the week media availability on Saturday. I pulled seven clips. I pulled seven clips out of that. Some fun stuff in there. We mentioned a couple of them on Saturday in the last podcast, but we're going to get more in depth here, and I'm going to let Carl kind of speak for himself, which is always fun. in terms of just plan for the week. Oh, I should say, we're also going to dig through and talk about the schedule just a little bit, just because I had a conversation on Twitter last week about basically like winnable games. And it's an interesting schedule. It's an interesting schedule. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. If we have time, which we might not, we might save this conversation for tomorrow night, then we'll also just kind of talk about where did the Buffs get better over the offseason and where did they get worse? And you know, we've kind of dug into these position groups individually, done all that sort of stuff. But just in terms of the big picture, here's a bit of a spoiler. I think that they got better in as many position groups as they got worse. And, you know, again, that's kind of what happens in football, is that so much of the roster does stick around and they get a year better, like the quarterbacks. It's like a quarterback, you will be better this year because Brendan Lewis is going to be better this year. And if he doesn't start, it's because they got somebody even better than him. You know, so there's some stuff like that, too, that kind of tweaks those numbers a little bit. But maybe we'll get into that today. Maybe we'll have to wait depending on whether I can get through the rest of this stuff pretty quickly. Four podcasts this week. Obviously, doing one right now. We're going to have this out on Monday. We have practice Tuesday and Wednesday this week. So Tuesday night there will be a podcast. Wednesday night there will be a podcast. And then the last two practices are Friday and then the scrimmage on Saturday. So there'll be another podcast up Friday night. Obviously, we'll be live on Saturday. So there won't be a podcast on Thursday. And that is kind of the plan for the week. I'm actually not sure who I'm going to talk to. Again, tomorrow's first day in pads. So you typically like go find linemen. I really like talking to Casey Roddick. But he also has had to do a lot of interviews the last couple days. So maybe hold off for a few more. I think he might enjoy those anyway, though. I'm curious. I want to hear more about Clay Patterson, specifically talking about some of the things that you're about to hear Carl talk about when it comes to Clay Patterson, the new tight ends coach and passing game coordinator. Montana, Lamonius Craig, of course, is on the list. Alex Fontenot's on the list. Terrence Lang, Jalen Sami, definitely on the list. Quinn Perry, Robert Barnes. And more of these corners, these defensive backs. This is a really fun roster. And again, we're going to talk later on in this show about whether fun can translate into winning. But at the very least, it's a fun group of guys that should be able to play actual football, which is a step in the right direction after some of those games we saw last year. I think that's it for all these notes and stuff. So we can just dig into what Carl had to say. And, you know, these aren't going to go in chronological order, so we're going to be jumping around a little bit. Instead, I kind of organized them by how they kind of fit together. And so, like, the opening statement, you know, he talks about the defense, talks about the offense. I split that into two separate things, and we're going to start with some defensive stuff. And then the second half of all of this, we'll be talking about the offense. So here's the beginning of Carl's opening statement, and it kind of cuts off in the middle because then he gets into some more offensive stuff. And like I said, we're gonna hit all of that later on. But here's that opening statement. A little bit of talk about what went down in practice on Saturday, the third practice for the Buffs of spring camp.
We just finished up week one, really. I felt like, you know, things are progressing really, really well. You know, we're starting to do, like today, we did some situational play in that last team period, playing the second down, playing the third, wherever the second down ended up, we had to play the third down. It was great to hear the communication on defense. You know, that's something that I think has been really important for our defense to be a really good defense, if we can get all 11 guys really understanding their role and having great discussion and communication in their adjustments. And I felt for the first time since I've been here, that was as good as I've ever seen, you know, and heard. You know, they did a really good job that way. Even the second team, I thought they did a really good job. So I think our defensive coaches are doing a good job of really helping them understand our package and understanding the adjustments and the nuances with it. I'm very pleased with that. You know, I remember my first year, it was helter skelter out there. It was different. But this year, even coming off of last season, you can see that development, you know, definitely with some of the players.
All right. So obviously there's a bunch of new faces out on that defense. No more Nate Landman, no more Carson Wells, no more Christian Gonzalez, no more Mark Perry, no more Mekhi Blackmon. I think that's it, though. Only those, like, six starters, five starters, whatever. When you play young players, when you play guys who are new to starting, which will be the case at a bunch of these positions, there are a couple things you worry about. First one, obviously, in the Buffs' case, when you're playing guys who are freshmen and sophomores, really young players, it's just size and strength. And can you hold up, you know, as a freshman linebacker, like Owen Carey going up against a 22-year-old guard when you have to beat that block, get in the backfield to make a play? Those are some of the questions. But a lot of the questions come on the mental side. And I think that the best way to see whether the mental side is an issue is through this communication, understanding where you're supposed to go. And it's a really good sign to hear that the communication is at a level that is potentially better than it's been in the last few years. Again, that's not what you expect when you lose a Nate Landman and Carson Wells and all these guys who, for a couple of years now, have been the identity of this defense. I think that being the longer you run the same defense, the easier it gets to communicate well and understand where you're going and be on the same page. You know, there's less thinking. There's less debate. You know, there's if Quinn Perry and Robert Barnes are lined up next to each other and Quinn says, okay, bump to the right. And Robert says, no, that's not what we do. Well, then all of a sudden you don't know what's up. You have about 5 seconds before the offense snaps the ball and it's just chaos, right? So some of this you just attribute to they've been around the system long enough. And again, that's the value of having Chris Wilson back again as defensive coordinator for the second consecutive season. I have a little bit more on this, actually, and in the specifics, and I really like how Carl breaks this down. And we'll talk more afterward, but here's the clip.
I'm hearing D linemen making adjustments when the backfield shifts over, things like that. They're making calls up front. Our linebackers are making calls and making sure that that everybody's on the same page. And then our secondary, they're making their calls in unison with everyone. So that's what I mean by the communication has been tremendous on all three levels. The lines are making adjustments, the linebacker level, and also the back end. Really doing well.
Again, that's what you want to hear. Just a big cohesive unit, but in particular, the defensive line handling their stuff, being able to make their own run fits. Again, that's probably one of the bigger questions with this defense is, I mean, because Nate Landman ran the front seven, right? So when it came to checking and changing and all that sort of stuff, a lot of that just ran through Nate. With the defensive line, you have a really veteran group. Potentially, I think pretty easily the most veteran group on the team. Honestly, the most veteran group on the team in a landslide. I don't think anywhere else even comes close. I guess maybe the outside linebackers, but still, like, that's mostly because, like, a Josh Gustav, who is a sophomore, junior. Off the top of my head, I get lost. Those COVID years throw everything off. But they've played quite a bit, although they haven't been around quite as long. With this defensive line, when it starts with Terrence Lang, a sixth-year senior, fifth-year senior, something like that, Jalen Sami, who's been around even longer, you have some veterans there, and if they're able to move themselves into the right place and set themselves up and make it so that Quinn Perry and Robert Barnes or Marvin Hamm or whoever's out there, Owen Carey, can just kind of handle themselves, that opens things up. And to hear that they're making these calls, these adjustments, these tweaks, whatever you want to call them, that's definitely a really good sign. We can move along. Here's some interesting stuff from Carl on the cornerbacks. Again, a really young group. You have a couple of juniors in Nigel Bethel, Jalen Stryker. Obviously, Jalen hasn't played yet at CU, hasn't played a defensive snap. Nigel, likely your cornerback one going into this season. But behind that, you have all the guys from last year. You know, Nico Reed, Tyron Taylor, Kalen Moore. And then you have a bunch of true freshmen. But here's what Carl had to say about these cornerbacks so far in practice.
Offensively, I'm very pleased with the progress they've made with a new offense. You know, the first day was a really clean day. The second day got a little more challenging because the defense played a little bit more man. It was zone the first day. So you know how when man coverage, the coverage is tighter. So usually you know, the completions aren't going to be like every ball's completed now. It's going to be where it's a tough throw and a tough catch. Our corners are doing a tremendous job. The young guys, Kalen, even Josh Wiggins. You know, Nico didn't practice today because he's sick, but, you know, those young corners are stepping up and really, really being noticed out there. It's kind of, it's good to see that there's another generation of young corners like we had last year that are in the same caliber of player. So they're young, you know, including Nico and, you know, Tyron and those guys that are there that are playing right now. But we have another younger group behind them, but they are very competitive and they are making plays.
Again, it's what you want to hear. And I guess maybe this is the part in the podcast where you say, okay, haven't been allowed to see the team yet. Carl says everything's going great in there. He could just be lying. I don't think he would, although typically his reports from practice have been pretty positive, and maybe that's because he does run a pretty tight ship. You know, day one of practice, he says, we're moving as efficiently as we have before. We're finishing periods early because there's still time left on the clock, but we've run through all of our plays. And again, with Carl Durrell, it kind of makes sense that those are the kinds of things that you would do well. You get through practice well. There's no, like, downtime. So you do have that working in his favor. At the same time, you know, a lot of spring camps, fall camps, according to Carl, have gone really well. And I believe him. But again, when you can't see what's happening for yourself, you know, you can have just a little bit of doubt about whether everything is really going this well. So I guess you throw in that qualifier at this point. I think the one line from there that really stands out to me is that you have another generation of cornerbacks that's just as good as the last one. And that's really all you could ask for, right? Because from what we saw from Nico Reed and Kalen Moore and Tyron Taylor when he was at cornerback last year, that should be a really good group. You know, I think that at a minimum, you say 2 years from now, those are going to be some of your very, very best players on this team. Now, with Christian Gonzalez and Mekhi Blackman gone, you're really hoping that they can take some of those steps early on and start to become those players early on. Still, though, it's a very solid group from last year at the very least. And to hear that this next group, these I think there's two of the true freshman corners already on campus with the other two coming over the summer. If they're just as good as that, then you're really happy. Again, you're going to be putting them on the field at some point. You know, those five non-true freshman corners, I would be really surprised if they're able to play every single snap this season for this defense. But, you know, this is the situation you're in. You got to coach those guys up. And I guess maybe the other thing that you notice from there is obviously the switch from zone to man. You know, you play a lot of zone day one and then go over to man. One of my big questions for this season is just how much man this team can play. And a lot of that relies on these cornerbacks. Nigel Bethel, he can handle himself one-on-one. What about Kalen Moore? What about Nico Reed? Because if that's your top three and those three are winning more often than not in man coverage, that opens up so much for this defense, especially because it means that you take a little bit of the responsibility off of whoever your free safety is. You know, whether that's Trevor Woods, whether that's Torin Pittman, there's a bunch of guys who could wind up with that job. But if they're able to go back to this cover one scheme that they ran for the first half of last season, when that defense was potentially the best defense in the Pac-12, then you feel a lot more comfortable. Because again, you're not asking so much of whoever your free safety is. With Quinn Perry out there, you're just asking him to stand in the middle, read the quarterback's eyes. Everything's going to kind of get funneled to you underneath, and you don't have to play with a bunch of range. You don't have to cover everything within the hash marks and kind of be on the island. You know, in any situation where Quinn Perry has to defend a pass, there's also a cornerback on that receiver or another defender, whether it's a safety, whether it's Robert Barnes, who's much better in man coverage than zone coverage. There's always going to be somebody else. Even if, you know, if that receiver's being thrown to, he probably beat that corner. It does shorten the window to have somebody a step behind him, even if it'd be better just to be totally covered. So on top of that, you know, your run fits are much easier in man than in zone. You know, you do worry a little bit more about the quarterback being able to run the ball. But again, if you have Quinn Perry in the middle of the field, when you face off against a more mobile quarterback. Maybe instead of covering or calling him like your little hole defender underneath, you turn him into a spy. So he kind of does the same thing, except that he keeps an extra eye on the quarterback and tries to mirror him just a little bit more. So I do think that in a perfect world, these cornerbacks are good enough to play man coverage this season. And I think that that's probably the goal here. If you're going through this camp, while you have to be versatile, while you have to be diverse, I think that if you can lean on being a man coverage team, it's going to really, really benefit. And so at this point, I probably am just drilling this man coverage into all these guys so that over the summer, you know what you're working with. Over the summer, you know, okay, so third downs, 90% of the time, we've got man coverage across the board. Now, we might blitz Quinn up the middle. We might drop an extra guy into coverage with a three-man rush and have like two defenders underneath, or maybe you have two guys deep, or maybe you're playing a Drake London type player and you have to double cover somebody. If you know that you're doing that, then you know, okay, we need zone coverages to get through these first and second downs, and that means that you probably aren't expecting quite so many passes. And so it just changes a little bit what sort of plays you draw. Now, if the man coverage doesn't work, you need a more diverse zone package so that you don't get exposed. So just knowing whether you can do what you want to do, I think that that is probably, if I were Chris Wilson, or, you know, I think Brett Maxey's the defensive passing game coordinator, that would be kind of my big goal here. And I'd throw these guys in a lot of man coverage and see how they do. And it sounds like they're doing pretty well. And that's, again, one of the big signs from camp, I would say. Moving along, we can touch on the offense. So here's, I think this was the second half of Carl's opening statement, and you'll get a chance to hear about kind of big picture what's going on with this offense at this point.
I think offensively, you know, the tight ends continue to make a lot of plays. You know, Eric Olsen had a bunch of catches the first practice, had about five yesterday, and then, you know, again, he had about three or four today. You know, Austin Smith had some good plays today. I thought our runners had a couple big runs today, both Alex and Dion. Quarterbacks made some good throws and catches. I thought Jack Castera, just singling him out, is that he was noticed today. He made a few plays today that he continued and did from yesterday. So you're seeing some of the young guys really start to see the confidence start to build right now. Quarterbacks are doing well. You know, O-line, I think, is doing pretty well. You know, looking at some of our veteran players, Casey Roddick looks like a different Casey Roddick. Better athlete, better condition. You know, his weight's probably right around where it should be. He's not heavy, too heavy. And he's moving around so much better. Same thing with Noah Fenske, you know, and Frank and Jake. You know, I think Tommy's doing well. You know, he's our new addition at guard. He's doing some really good things too.
All right, so we touched on a couple of these things yesterday. Let's just kind of start at the top there. So obviously, first thing out of Carl's mouth when it comes to the offense, these tight ends. And that's what you want to hear. That's obviously what you want to hear. And I think it's even more exciting that they aren't talking about Brady Russell, because we have no doubt that Brady Russell is going to be a good football player. The question is, of the four other freshmen who are in that tight ends room, do you, first of all, have one who can go out there and make you kind of dynamic in your two tight end sets? But then also, do you have just like a future star? And the two tight ends he named, first of all, as he said, Eric Olsen, he's probably the kind of the buzz of camp at this point. He's the guy who you just keep coming back to. You talk to anybody about who's playing well, the first answer is Eric Olsen. That is obviously very notable. From there, Austin Smith being the other tight end gets mentioned. That's exciting. So for those of you who don't follow recruiting all that closely, Austin Smith was kind of that last, I think he was the very last signee or last commitment. No, it would have been last signee because he came in really late last year as a tight end out of Texas. Now, one of the things that makes him interesting, and we actually did talk about this a little bit yesterday, is that he came from an offense that didn't use the tight end. So he was basically like this big slot receiver they threw out there, which, I mean, modern tight ends, typically that is how they are used now, at least, you know, half the time or third of the time, whatever. So he came in, wasn't really rated. He might not have been rated at all by the you know recruiting services, but obviously the talent kind of speaks for itself. What he does kind of speaks for itself. He's a big, fast tight end, and he's one of those guys that you could just see being that diamond in the rough because he just didn't put enough on tape as a tight end to get recruited by the big guys. You know, why would Alabama be in on this guy when they can go after anybody in the country? And that includes the guys who are built like him, who can move like him, who caught passes like him, but also you at least have some tape of him as an inline tight end blocking, right? So for him to be one of these other names that's being mentioned, again, I think he's one of the most intriguing players on the team because of that skill set and because that's a position that hasn't really been used that much. I think that that's notable. And we're actually going to come back to the tight ends in a little bit here. But first, let's run through a couple of the other things Carl said. Good runs from Alex and Dion. You'll love to hear that. Jack Hestera, the wide receiver, making plays. Not a name that we've heard all that much before. This is the first mention, so I don't think you listen to that and say, ooh, Jack Hestera, he's going to be the new stud. But, you know, if he makes a couple plays in this scrimmage on Saturday, then we could really get the buzz moving. Ooh, offensive line. Some good stuff there. Starts by kind of praising Casey Roddick. And Casey was a guy who, so he had, we'll call it like whatever, the mysterious offseason injury that kept him out of spring ball last year. He wasn't really cleared until like 2 days before fall camp. Wasn't in good shape. First thing Carl says, in good shape. Seems like he's more athletic than before. And we also saw Casey have some struggles cracking into the starting lineup last year, which really surprised me because to me, he might be just could be your most talented offensive lineman. When you just look at him and say raw tools, raw traits, brains, all those things combined, who is the best? Like you look at him. You also look at, that's a good question. I mean, Austin Johnson, we'll talk more about Austin Johnson too. But Casey to me is, you know, he's everything that you could look for in a guard. Now it's just putting it together. And it's good to hear that he is doing well because you do, and you're kind of banking on him turning into a stud this year. If this offensive line is going to be, you know, one of the better offensive lines in the Pac-12, which would be a massive, massive step forward, which means it's probably kind of unlikely. Part of the equation is Casey Roddick being right up there as one of the very best guards in the Pac-12. And again, early buzz is good. That reminds me, Saturday, I played the interview with Brady, and I included like the context, you know, that was JT that came over, that was Clay Patterson who brought up him doing an interview with his shirt off and a man bun. I forgot to say, at one point in that interview, Casey comes over and just gives me a nice little slap on the back. And it's like a pat on the back. It's like, hey, what's up? Boy, does that still hurt. What a big, strong man. And so if you guys listen to that and it's like Brady saying, oh, yeah, heavy hands, whatever. That was Casey Roddick. And I forgot to mention that before. If you haven't listened to that podcast, go back and listen to it, though. Other notes on the offensive line. We talked about this stuff a little bit more. Frank Phillip, Jake Wiley, those are your tackles. Tommy Brown at guard, a little bit of a surprise. A pretty big surprise, honestly, but that's where he's working right now. Obviously, Casey Roddick is your other guard. And, you know, I guess let's just start there because you lose two pieces from last year's offensive line. You lose Colby Purcell, your center. You lose Kari Kuch, your best offensive lineman, who was a guard. All of a sudden, Tommy Brown is taking over for Kari. And so you look at that, and to be honest, I don't think you see too much of a drop-off. Now, it might be a little bit bold, but based on what I've heard about Tommy, I don't think you see too much of a drop-off. Now, obviously, Jake Wiley, as a sophomore, you expect him to be better. Frank Phillip, now 8 months removed, maybe closer to a year removed from his shoulder surgery, you expect him to get better. Plus, just like the natural progression of playing more football, you expect him to be better. Casey Roddick, obviously, you expect him to be better based on what we've heard. At center, Colby Purcell, now you have Noah Fenske and Austin Johnson competing. First of all, I'll say this. The reason I expect the offensive line to be better isn't because you can go through on paper and be like, oh, yeah, this guy or this guy, this guy or this guy, this guy with more experience. The reason you expect it to be better is because you have Kyle DeVan as offensive line coach and not Mitch Rodrigue. I think that there's a real chance that the Buffs had, again, I hate just bashing on people, but potentially the worst offensive line coach in Power 5 football last year. And if not, he was very near the bottom. Now you have somebody who's coming in from Michigan. Sure, he was only quality control there, but that was the best offensive line in the country. They won the award for the best offensive line in the country, and he was helping out there. He also has been like the assistant offensive line coach with the New Orleans Saints, and he has a very good resume, and already offensive linemen are saying, like, yep, this is a massive step forward. And coaches are saying that as well. So that is why you expect to be better, not because of just like the individual pieces. I think you could also, though, look at these individual pieces and say, just on paper for this group to be better, it's going to come down to the center position because everything else is, I think you're not guaranteed that it's a wash at worst, but you're pretty close to it because, again, you lose Kari, you upgrade everybody else, and you put Tommy in his place. At center, though, that could be, at least on paper, kind of the deciding factor between last year's line and this year's line. Noah Fenske comes in from Iowa. He's got, I think, 2 years of eligibility left. It might be three. I'm actually going to check on that one. But Austin Johnson is the competition. He's been hurt quite a bit. He does project as one of the very best linemen, one of the more talented linemen in this group. And it does sound like Carson Lee is back with the program. Obviously, he's working out. He's doing the drills. He is a part of the conversation. Right now, he's working at guard. I think that would make you expect that he's probably in third right now in that competition. Still, it's worth paying attention to. Here's more on Austin Johnson. Real quick, though, Noah Fenske does have 3 years of eligibility left, as does Austin Johnson. Carson Lee has three as well, but also hasn't used a redshirt year. So there's the information you need to know. Here's more on Austin Johnson.
He's been here a couple of years, but he's performing and playing as if he's an older player, to be honest with you. So I haven't seen a lot of really competitive reps with him since I've been here. But these last few days, I've been very pleased with what he's done. You know, even his communication, what he's doing, making sure he's making, you know, the directional calls that the line needs to make. And, you know, I feel like that's definitely improved too. And he has done a really nice job, you know, given coming off of both legs, you know, having the surgeries that he's had. He's done a really good job of just getting past that, and now he's playing football.
So if we want to kind of like dig into the nuance of, will these centers be better than Colby Purcell? Will they be worse than Colby Purcell? Colby in particular, you know, his best strength was his brain. He's a really smart guy. You know, he also, in terms of just like pure blocking ability, like again, as a fifth-year senior, he held his own. He didn't really get pushed around. He also was really nothing special as a blocker. You know, just pretty average there, good brain. Combine that with the coaching situation last year, and I think that some of the brain got wasted, and because of that, you saw him get out of position from time to time, and because of that, wasn't quite able to make the blocks because he isn't these freaky sort of athletes who can recover when they're out of position. And so that's why I think he struggled last year. Now, again, the coaching situation is different, so purely on paper, how do these two compare? I think that you probably look at Austin Johnson for sure and probably Noah Fenske and say, okay, they should be stronger, should be maybe just a little bit more mobile, especially Austin Johnson, probably a little bit more mobile. That lateral mobility is what matters on the interior right there. And do they have the brain to run everything that's going on? Because In college football, usually that's not on the quarterback unless you have like a senior quarterback, unless you have somebody pretty good who's been there for a while. A lot of the time it is the offensive line, and typically the center, who says like, okay, we got this guy, look over there, we're sliding this way, whatever. And to hear that he seems to understand that stuff. That's good for Austin Johnson. The fact that Noah Fenske's still ahead of him on the depth chart, he's working with the ones while Johnson's working with the twos. I think that probably says something good about Fenske as well. So we'll see how that all shakes out. And we'll also get to see on Saturday whether these guys can block Terrence Lang and Jalen Sommy and Naeem Rodman and Guy Thomas on the edge and probably Chance Main starting on the other edge. They have some options there, though. So we'll get a chance to see what it looks like on Saturday. But again, this offensive line, book it. It will be better this year. The question is, by better, do you mean 115th out of 130 in college football, or do you mean 60th or 70th? Because if you can just get into that top 100, and I think that this is kind of true for a lot of these positions, or even just like the passing game in general. If you can get the passing game into the top 100, if you can get the running game into the top 100, if you can get the offensive line into the top 100, you're not going to go out there and, you know, go undefeated, be a Pac-12 title threat. You're going to need more of an improvement than that to get there. But if you were to combine that with last year's defense, I think that last year's team probably makes a bowl game. I think that's all that defense needed to win six games with that schedule. And we'll talk about this year's schedule a little bit more later on, like I said. Now, also, this year's defense is probably not as good as last year's defense, but we'll see about that. Moving along, though. Here is, before we get to the tight ends, here's this. Basically, how much of the new offense is being thrown at these guys right now?
A lot. And the hard thing here, you know, I didn't mention much about our receivers, that we're really thin at receiver right now. We only have six guys that are practicing. And, you know, we're in a lot of three, sometimes four receiver sets. That's not a lot of receiver depth. So we have to be, you know, being more, you know, 12 personnel at times because of the receiver depth. So, you know, I think they're growing and doing some really good things, like I mentioned with Jack. You know, I thought today, a couple of really great catches today in the red zone area that, you know, RJ had, and we had a great end zone catch, you know, from Montana. So those guys are making plays, but I'm concerned about our depth. You know, we just started, right? I got 12 more of these. And so we've got to find the right pace so that we can have some sustainability out there. You know how this game is. You know, you get nicked up.
All right. I mean, first, the simple stuff. Touchdown from Montana. RJ Snead making plays. We expect those things. Brings up Jack Hystera again. Again, too soon to get hyped about Jack Hystera. But if this keeps going on, then maybe we can talk. Bigger picture, though, there was one thing he said that I think really stands out. And that was that he says there are a lot of three receiver sets and sometimes four receiver sets. We don't know what this offense is going to look like. It does sound like it's going to be kind of that base 11 personnel, though. Three receivers on the field. That's again, very notable. I'm excited to see what this offense looks like on Saturday, but I do think that Saturday's version of the offense will be more heavy. You know, they'll see a fullback more, see two tight ends on the field more often, and that's just because of the injuries. So I'm not going to read too much into it. What I might read more into, though, is, you know, how many RPOs are there? You know, or how much play action is there? What style of running? Is it power running? Is it zone running? Is Brendan taking deep shots out of these heavy sets? That'd be kind of fun to see. So there's stuff like that you can pick up on. But I also think that when Mike Sanford came over, because he's coming over from Minnesota, people thought, oh, it's going to be a very heavy offense. There's going to be a lot of tight ends. And I got kind of sucked up in that for a second there, too. In reality, though, I'm not sure that I really believe that. I do think that you see three receivers on the field, and in particular because of what we just heard from Carl. Again, we won't know for sure. I don't even know that they know for sure until they figure out. You know, if you have Brady Russell and Eric Olson, and both of them are who, at this point, who I think we can say who we think they are, because Eric is making all those plays, then maybe that conversation changes. But I think that was the biggest thing that I pulled out of there. And I think that's probably it. Again, like Montana and RJ making plays. I've got RJ. I'm pretty confident RJ will be the number one receiver this year. RJ Snead, for those of you who haven't been paying attention, transferred in from Baylor over the offseason. He's a senior. He was an all Big 12 performer. He just has the resume and the highlight reel and just the general production to back that up, that he probably is your number one receiver. And again, I have Montana penciled in as my number two receiver. I think that there's a lot of competition there, though, so we'll have to see what exactly that winds up being. But for those two to be making plays, not a huge surprise. Last clip here from Carl, and this is him expanding a little bit on the tight ends. In particular, you know, I was asked, like, you know, sounds like the tight ends are doing really well. Does the fact that Clay Patterson, your new tight ends coach, is also your passing game coordinator, do you think that's why that you're seeing more of this production?
Well, that was kind of my thought process with when we built the staff offensively is to have the tight end coach be someone that's more intricate in the passing game. You know, and Clay's done with his experience, he's he really can coach all of those skill positions. You know, we have a great receiver coach too, but there's no question in my mind, though, that him being in that role ties everything together, you know, ties at least the interior part of the passing game together, and that usually involves the tight ends a little bit better.
So there you go. I think that's it. I think that's it from Carl. And like I said, we're going to talk about the schedule a little bit, which, you know, we talked about the schedule when it first dropped. Obviously, we knew the non-conference games. We've known those non-conference games for probably a decade, honestly, but we did find out what the actual shape of the schedule is in terms of Pac-12 play. You know, we knew home and road. We didn't know when exactly those games would happen, and I felt like now is a good time to kind of circle back and say, which of those games are games that the Buffs should win or could win or whatever, because so much has changed in the Pac-12 over this offseason. Real quick, though, Breckenridge Brewery is awesome, and I love them. Like I said, had a big night with Breckenridge on Saturday, watching all of those basketball games and then, you know, getting into trouble afterward. Then, what else even happened? I guess that was it for beer over the weekend. I think that this week, there'll probably be more beer. See, Rockies opening day is Thursday. Obviously, Colorado's off. Maybe I will try to go opening day. That scrimmage is Saturday. Like I said, we've got a live show after. I'm going to have a whole bunch of writing to do that day too, because, you know, it's my job. After that, though, I think the Rockies play at 6, so maybe I can get to that. The Lakers are here. I'm not even sure that Laker game has had a time that's been announced, but I'm going to find a way to watch some sports this week. And when I do that, I will be drinking Breckenridge beers. You know why? Because they sell them at, I think all the stadiums in Denver, because they partner with all these different teams. It really is the best stuff out there. So get your hands on some good company hard seltzers, whatever. You will not be disappointed. Also, today is your last chance to get in on this offer that, trust me, you want to get in on. If you pick either of these teams tonight in the national championship game to win, and you put $5 on them through DraftKings Sportsbook, you will get $200 in free bets if you get it right. That's five $40 free bets. It's an awesome promotion. It's your last chance to get in. Again, this is only for new users, but even if you're not a new user, I'm sure there's a whole bunch of other options. Actually, let me pull this up and see what these other options are. I'm going to be on the DMVR Bets show tomorrow. Tomorrow at 3:30, it'll be live. I'll plug that because why not? The Masters this week too. Oh, a profit boost up to 200%. So the special for non-new users for tonight is this. You just opt in to the promotion and you're randomly assigned some sort of profit boost. And you don't know how big that profit boost is going to be. It could be 200%, 100%, 50%, 25%, or 10%. I just got mine. Let's see. 25%. So that means if you take Kansas to cover the minus four, instead of that being minus 110, you get it at plus 113. So you flip the odds from in the sportsbook's favor to in your favor. Definitely take advantage of that. Take advantage of all the awesome Masters stuff. And if you haven't signed up yet, use the code DMVR at DraftKings Sportsbook to bet $5 on any college hoops team to win and get $200 in free bets if they do. If they win, you win with promo code DNVR this week at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older, Colorado only, new customers only. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. Also, got to plug Ripple. What Ripple is a fast acting dissolvable. So it's clinically proven to hit 2 times faster than the leading gummy. They don't use like sketchy science. They actually were studied by Colorado State University. Boo. But it was a randomized placebo-controlled trial with real people. The results were published in a peer-reviewed journal. The way it works is it's just this little packet. It's flavorless. It's odorless. It's dissolvable. You just put it in anything, typically like in a drink, and just drink it, and then that's the fastest way to get THC into your system. If you really want fast, just stick out your tongue, put it on your tongue, and you'll be good to go very quickly. There's different doses. You get to pick all that sort of stuff, and you can pick it all out at Colorado's premier dispensary. That's Lightshade, with 11 convenient Denver Metro and Aurora locations. They offer something for everyone from the casual consumer to the connoisseur. They have a premium selection of cannabis concentrates, top shelf flower, edibles, tinctures, accessories, and more. Plus, podcast listeners can get 25% off non-sale items with the code DNVR. Shop online at lightshade.com for pickup, or visit a Lightshade location near you. All righty. Let's run through the schedule. We're already much further into this podcast than I expected, so we'll do that other stuff I was talking about. You know, where'd they get better? Where'd they get worse? At some point in the next couple of days, hopefully I'll have an interview to play tomorrow. We'll figure it out. For now, though, like I said, digging into this schedule, first of all, you start at home against TCU. A big storyline here, of course, is that Mark Perry is now playing safety over at TCU. He was Colorado's second leading tackler last year, made some plays on the ball late in the season that, you know, had me pretty excited about what was to come for him at Colorado. Understand why he wanted a fresh start. You know, he had some struggles at CU, and I don't think the fans forgot about those. Now, though, he'll be, what, a junior at TCU? I expect him to start, and that's kind of the big storyline. Point is, though, can Colorado beat TCU? I think so. At least at this point, I'm not ruling it out. You know, we're going to learn a lot about this team, and there's a chance that this team is as bad as Twitter would make you think it is, because they did lose however many starters. But as Carl Durrell and Chris Wilson and just about everybody has said over and over and over again, that's college football. Like, a lot of teams lose a lot of starters every single year. Now, again, that doesn't make it like, oh no, it's fine that they left, but it does mean that this is not all that rare to have this much turnover. Because what, you lost 4 starters to, you know, graduation, to expiring eligibility, to the NFL, whatever. You lost 6 starters to the transfer portal. And so where does that leave you? You know, you're down 10 starters. It's not a good situation, but I mean, what, last year Utah lost 10 starters on its defense alone. Now, Utah was also a better team, so it was easier to play, whatever. Point is, we don't know what this team is. It could really struggle. I don't think there's a world where it's as bad as last year's team. I think it has to be better just because the coaching staff will be so much better. You'll have better play calling offensively. You'll have a better quarterback. The offensive line, at the very least, will be... It won't just be like a joke, you know? And I feel bad saying that still, but last year, it was a really, really, really bad offensive line. And also, I mean, that might have been more notable to the record than the play calling, even. Who's to say? But this year, the team will at least be as good as last year's. I'm confident in that. Especially because you remember, like, that defense, it was all hurt most of the year. And so, while it was a really great defense, second half of the season, you really didn't see it just because, you know, you didn't have a Nate Landman. You didn't have Makai. And again, you're not going to have those guys this year, but you didn't have them for half of last year anyway. I guess before we dig in, just to make this whole point clear, I think that this team is probably going to win 4 or 5 games as of right now. And I think that to do that, they're going to have to be much, much better. There is a chance, though, that it really does struggle and that it is the worst team in the Pac-12. That is very much on the table. But when I run through the schedule, here's what I see. With TCU, that is not a team that is scary. It's kind of a below average Power 5 team. You know, I think that you look over and say, like, who in the Pac-12 would be competitive with them? And I think they'd beat, like, an Oregon State, although Oregon State was surprisingly good last year. Stanford had a down year, so it's tough to compare them. But, like, TCU, UCLA, I think that is the kind of game where it's like, yeah, you could really see that one going either way. Let's see where I wanted to see the results last year. First of all, they were 5-7, but they played. Oh, I thought they played a Pac-12 team. Maybe not. Cal. They beat Cal 34-32. So that kind of puts it in perspective, where it's like Cal. Yeah, the Buffs should be able to beat Cal. We'll get to that later. But TCU, I think that TCU is a favorite. I think they're probably something like a 6.5-point favorite. But I do think that game, especially at home, first game of the season, that's one that's on the table. At Air Force the next week, I don't know how you evaluate this one. Because Air Force, I mean, at this point, they feel like they're a perennial 10-win team. Again, they play in the Mountain West, but the triple option just makes everything weird. I'm not going to say that you can't beat Air Force, though. Although, again, I'll say going down to Colorado Springs, If there is a preseason line for this game, I would guess that it's about the same as the TCU line. And I'd guess that both of those are about 6.5 points, that the Buffs are underdogs. From there, at Minnesota, you know, I think TCU's better than Minnesota. I'll start there. I think that being at Minnesota definitely changes the dynamic, though, of course. And this is probably one where you're like a 7-point underdog, especially because you played them last year and it was a 30-0 loss, which is wild to think about. But again, in that game, they had so many opportunities, just blew them all. You know, they were down 13-0 in the third quarter, or just score two touchdowns. It's not asking all that much. And I think that if you just go back and replay that game just with Colorado's offense, I think they have at least 10 points at halftime, you know? But still, Minnesota's favored, but I don't look at any of these three and say, like, oh, boy, is that going to be a beatdown? The Buffs just don't have any chance there. From there, you're at home against UCLA. It's a tough read. I think that stylistically, that's a tougher game for Colorado than these other ones, just because you're going to have to put up a lot of points. I think that UCLA is going to probably be top three in scoring this year, and I think that their defense is going to be in the bottom half. And so can Brendan Lewis and all these guys in week four of the season keep up with that? You know, again, right now I'd say no, but you're at home, so who knows? And again, I think that they were leading in that game last year before they just absolutely imploded. And that one was on the road. I guess going through this exercise, the key takeaway is who the hell are the Buffs? What are the Buffs going to do? At Arizona, I get that, like, yeah, Arizona, they added so many pieces. The program's moving in the right direction. But again, like, let's put things into context here. They got Washington State's quarterback. Yeah, Jaden Delora, he's going to be better than what they had. But again, it's not like you look at Washington State's offense last year and you're like, oh, holy heck, how are we going to beat these guys? No. And again, moving in the right direction for Arizona, that means they won a game last year. They lost 17 in a row. I know you're on the road at Arizona, but I think that one's a win. Again, though, like, if this team is as bad as it could be, then this one is on the table, but this is going to be kind of this, honestly, defining stretch starts right there. That's your last game. That's October 1st, last game before the bye. After the bye, you're home against Cal. You've got to be able to beat Cal. You're at Oregon State. Oregon State was good last year. They get BJ Baylor, that running back, back. It's Oregon State, though. It's Oregon State. Like, that should be a competitive game. From there, you're home against Arizona State. They lose Jaden Daniels, their star quarterback, who even he was like 10 touchdowns, 10 interceptions passing last year, which is crazy because he was super efficient. But that's just the direction that program has taken. They're in big trouble. I think they're a candidate to be bottom three in the Pac-12 for sure. Again, if Colorado is going to make a bowl game, this game against Arizona must win. Cal must win. Oregon State must win. Arizona State must win. And those are four games in a row, though you do get that bye week in there. From there, though, home against Oregon, and you should probably lose that one by 15 points. That's probably what the line is, and I would probably still take Oregon in that one. You're at USC. You call that one a loss for sure. And, you know, USC, is it overrated? All that. Yeah, whatever. But, you know, Colorado's never beaten USC. So you bet on USC until you're wrong. You know, it's the same thing with like the Los Angeles Chargers. It's like, yeah, they have Justin Herbert. Yeah, they got all these cool players. You bet on them to screw things up until they prove you wrong, and then you reevaluate. So that Oregon, then at USC, that's a tough stretch. At Washington, that's a tough one too. That's one of the bigger question marks in the Pac-12. I think Washington, at any point, just because they recruit well, they could just pull it together. You know, similar to Stanford, I see them in that same way where it's like, yeah, they were really bad last year. At the same time, they had the freshman quarterback. And they got Penix up there now, right? Yeah, I think Penix was Washington from Indiana. Now I'm starting to doubt that, though. He one of those northern schools. That's the point. But Washington, are they a 4-win team? Are they an 8-win team? Who knows? But again, for Colorado to make a bowl game, I think that this is kind of the final piece of the puzzle. Is you have to win at Husky Stadium, which is not an easy place to win, because at the end of the season you're home against Utah. Utah is a very strong program, and they lost some really important pieces, but you bet on them being able to replace those. Right at this point, Utah gets the benefit of the doubt. So again, just like, what is the path to the bowl game? It's winning one of your non-conference games, whether that's TCU, whether that's Air Force, whether that's Minnesota. Win one of your non-conference games. From there, win against Arizona, Cal, Oregon State, Arizona State. And here's what I'll say. I'll pick the Buffs in all of those, because I think you go 2-2 at worst, and so I finish 500, right? I'll put that on record right now. You go minimum 2-2 against those four teams, and then you beat Washington. You know, that's your path. One non-conference game: Arizona, Cal, Oregon State, Arizona State, which would be, again, four wins in a row would be wild. And then you go into Washington and win that one. Now, obviously, if you can pull off the home upset against Utah, who knows? You beat USC for the first time, that'd be great. You beat Oregon in Boulder, I guess that makes it easier. Sure, that would work too. Or I think more likely than pulling any of those three upsets is to go 2-1 in non-conference play. But yeah, so there's kind of like looking through. I don't think things are as dire as Twitter would make you think. I really don't. And again, we aren't going to know until the season. Like, it'll be fun to get out there and go to these scrimmages and see what they look like and watch the spring game. At the same time, though, I mean, if Montana, Lamonius Craig, can beat Kalen Moore, or they have a great battle or whatever, we just don't know what that level of competition is either way, right? Like, we know Montana's made some plays. We know Kalen Moore's made some plays. Are they, like, average Pac-12 players for their position? They below average, better. Who knows? And so that kind of puts a kink in everything. Yeah. I think that does it for today. Like I said, this is a big week. This is going to be a really fun week. I hope you guys are excited, and I hope you're going to be out there on Saturday. You know, this reminds me. I saw somebody on Twitter saying, like, oh, I just couldn't bring myself to renew my season tickets. You know, it just hasn't been fun at that stadium recently. It's like, what are you talking about? They went 4-2 at home last year. You know, where it's like, yes, did the road games really stink? Yeah. And some of those home games were not all that fun either. You know, I'm not going to... Actually, is that even true? I guess Minnesota was not fun. But you go through like the home schedule last year, Northern Colorado, you win 35-7. Sure, it was too close in that first quarter. Whatever, you won by 4 touchdowns. The home game against Minnesota, yeah, that was ugly. The home game against USC, yeah, but if you didn't see that one coming, Colorado has never beaten USC before. Would have been nice if it was closer than 37-14, though. Then you have the 34-point shutout of Arizona. Then you have the double overtime win against Oregon State. Then you have the close game against Washington you pull out. I don't know. Like, to say it hasn't been fun at Folsom Field, it's like they haven't had a losing record at Folsom Field since 2015. They were 4-2 there last year. So, I mean, I think that it's about time for a lot of people to kind of pull themselves together and stop crying in the corner about this football team and realize that this is a really good coaching staff. There's a lot of really talented players on this team. Brendan Lewis is really talented. Alex Fontenot has all the potential in the world to be one of the better running backs in the Pac-12. I think expectations should be for him to be top 6 running back in the Pac-12. And if he's not, then it's probably because Ramon Jefferson or who knows, maybe even Deion Smith breaks out. With these wide receivers, you bring in R.J. Snead, who, you know, if you're an all Big 12 receiver, why can't you be an all Pac-12 receiver, right? And the answer is the passing game what it was last year? If that's the case, then yeah, it's probably not going to happen. But you add in what should be an all Pac-12, an all conference player. You have other guys who are talented and poised to break out. If you get one of those other receivers to pop, all of a sudden you're looking at one of the better receiving cores in the Pac-12. And you remember that you have Phil McGagan as your wide receivers coach, and Carl Durrell is your head coach. So expecting one of those guys to figure it out, not that bold. Brady Russell's your tight end. You have a top half of the Pac-12 tight end. You also have all this talent behind him. You have an offensive line that at the very least should be greatly improved. If not, I mean, I think it has the potential to actually be solid, good even. So, I don't know. The sky isn't falling. The sky fell. The sky fell back in December. But again, like, it's teams lose players. I think we can stop living in the past for at least a few more weeks and see what's going on here. And again, that starts on Saturday, and it should be so much fun. I'm fired up. Hopefully I'll see some of you guys out there. And yeah, should be a big week. I'll be back tomorrow night after practice to share more, and we'll talk then.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.